Hi, we're Josh
and Arielle Wamsley,
owners of Green Valley Tree LLC, based in North Windham.
We're proud to sponsor Connecticut East this week and to serve the communities of Windham and New London counties with our tree removal and plant healthcare services.
Visit our website at greenvalleytreeworks.com for a full list of our services or give us a call on 860-234-4041. We look forward to hearing from you.
It's 2021 and we'd start the year with an inspirational story from 92-year-old Norwich native Tom Lafreniere. From his military service in Korea to his life as a firefighter and flying a Russian MiG jet in his 70s. Plus a look at some of the other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. It's our first podcast of 2021, and before we get into the heavier stories we normally cover and what will be happening in the new legislative session starting soon in the state, we wanted to bring you an inspirational story. Tom Lafreniere is a Norwich native and has lived an incredible life, serving his country in the military to serving his community as a firefighter and later helping to run his family's tavern. There are others out there who have also led exceptional lives and we'd like to hear from them. But in the meantime, sit back and listen to Tom's story.
Tom, you have had an amazing career, an amazing life. We're going to delve a little bit into it over the next 25 minutes. You were many years ago a Norwich firefighter. It almost cost you your life. Talk to us a little bit about that part of your life and your career.
My life... And there, after I got out of the service, I went directly into firefighting. I had put my name in prior, but I had to go to the service first. And it was funny, I received a letter in Korea that I'd been accepted at the Norwich Fire Department and report at such and such a time. So I had about 4 months left in overseas in Korea, and I had to write the chief a letter that I'm sorry the government's got my body for another 4 months, but I will report as soon as I leave the service and go into the firefighting. And sure enough, I got out October 12th of 1952, and I got home, and I think I was home 2 days, and I had to report to central headquarters, which was on Chestnut Street. And I went right to work right away.
I'm curious to know, you'd just served your country,
yes,
being in the military, and then decided that wasn't enough, that you then wanted to serve your local community, come back to Connecticut, and do another very difficult job. Why did you want to do that?
I guess I like the excitement. I've done some things that were exciting, and I still like to do things exciting. And we'll get that later on about my flight in a Russian MiG jet. But it was very exciting right away. We had older apparatus. We didn't have the latest technology, but little by little, we got it. Proved to be a bit much. It was exciting. You never know what you were going into. You went into a fire. We didn't have the mask, this and any. And a couple of my men would be with me, and we'd go in, and we would be vomiting and start of breath, but we rescued some people in a downstairs apartment, and it was difficult sometimes. You couldn't see, and you were sick, but you had a duty to do to take care of life first, and then take care of your firefighting abilities later, but life was number one.
So just so we're absolutely clear for people who are listening to this, unlike the fire departments of today, you had no breathing apparatus, no special equipment. You just went in to a fire, breathing in everything that was going on, because that's just how it was done.
Correct.
That's incredible.
Yes. Yeah. And we didn't get the ventilators till later on, but we were, what were they called, bare bones at the beginning. And we accepted it because that's your first thing, is take care of life. You got to get the people out first. It was something. And then I'm going to tell you about one very unique situation. This gentleman hung himself. We were called to take care of it. And we don't know why and so forth. But the next year, his son committed suicide the same way, by hanging himself in the same place. I never forgot that, because I was on the call at the same things. You never know what goes on in a person's head. That's all.
It is an incredibly tough job to do. You've just given an example of that. Before we started this interview, we were having a quick conversation in which you told me you nearly lost your life twice.
Right.
Tell us about those.
In Korea, we were battered down, and we used to have a guy by the name of Bedcheck Charlie come over every night to harass us. He would drop hand grenades and where we were bunkered in. And lo and behold, once in a while it came pretty close, and then we got overrun a couple of times. And it was touch and go for a while. The guy upstairs took very good care of me. He didn't want me to go yet. And it was cold. It was, how can I put it this way? Your mind was always going how to protect yourself and to stay alive. It's something you never forget. Still in your mind after all these years, when you hear a little sound at night even, you wake up. I don't care how little a sound is, you wake up. And it never leaves you. That's it. So lucky I came through. I got frostbite in my feet and my fingers. And this day and age, I just have to be careful how I walk. I've got, I guess you call it the frostbite in my fingers and feet. I have no feeling in the tips of my fingers and my feet. But I made it out alive, and I learned respect and discipline in the service. I was drafted, and I'll never forget the letter I got from the President of the United States. It said, "Greetings from the President of the United States. Your friends and neighbors have selected you for the armed forces." I said to myself, I thought I had better friends and neighbors than that. But it turned out to be, you grew up fast and you learn to get along with people. It was difficult. Everybody's different. I'll tell you a quick story. Going through basic training, we had a guy, I won't tell you where he was from, and he wouldn't clean up, he wouldn't shower. So we took it upon ourselves to give him a GI shower. We got together, two or three of us, and put him in a shower, and we scrubbed him down with Fels Naphtha soap and the scrubbing brushes, and we scrubbed him up. And from then on, he took a shower. And then the other one, each one of us had a turn at 6 o'clock in the morning to do physical, we used to call it physical torture. That was exercise at 6 o'clock in the morning. So I was chosen one morning to lead it. Well, I guess playing football for NFA, they kept us in good shape, gave us good physical abilities, and I started to use it that morning at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, I went out and passed that night, and I came back. My bunk was gone. It was up in the rafters, hanging up there. So that told me a story. Ease up on that physical torture. So they have very unique ways to tell you what to do and what not to do.
So you told us about the fact that you almost lost your life while being in the military. Now, when again, going back to the Norwich Fire Department, you almost lost your life as a firefighter. Tell us about that.
It was April 3rd, 1962. We had just come back from a brush fire. And we were backing in, and the operator told us, truck fire at the Van Tassel Leather. It was a leather company. They were using it for storage. And the truck was backed in, and it started to smoke. This is the story we got. So this was the operator at Central Headquarters told us. And he said to me, the chief was out of town. The deputy chief had to go to a hanging on High Street. So that left me the officer in charge, which I was a lieutenant then. So we go over there, and the smoke is coming out of the back of the truck. It's a huge truck. There was a wall, a four-foot parapet wall. I said, guys, get behind this wall, and we'll get it on an angle, and we'll put this fire out. But just in case there's a little explosion, we can extinguish it, and if it blows back, we won't get the full force of it. So I had one of the guys at the hydrant, one outside the wall, and the rest of us were behind the wall. We started to extinguish it, put it at an angle so it would get in there, and all of a sudden, it exploded. Such a violent explosion. We were all on fire. And luckily, it had rained the night before. There were a puddle of water behind there, and we're all burning. And luckily, as I said to Tom, spoon the water to your face. Try to knock it down and roll around, see if you can. And the explosions kept coming on all the time. The initial one is huge, but then the other was in the warehouse, and that kept going on and on. I don't know how long, and no one ever told us how long I was behind the wall, and another firefighter that survived with me by the name of Tom DeMauro. The other three guys perished right there. They burned. I could watch them burn, but there was not much we could do. As I said, I don't know how long it took them to extinguish it, but it took a long time. And it was like being in combat again, and something I've never forgotten.
I understand it was basically chemicals that were exploding in the factory.
38,000 pounds of methylethyl ketone peroxide. Yeah, and I guess it's very volatile stuff. That's when they didn't label the trucks with explosives or hazardous chemicals. And after that, it took about a year in Connecticut to do that and have a system of labeling what was on the truck. And then it took about 5 years for the rest of the country, from what I hear. So it did some good, you know, really, but it took four lives to do it.
Now, I understand that shortly after that terrible incident, you decided to retire from the fire service and take up a safer career. You took over your father's tavern, Bid's Tavern in Greenville. Right. Tell us about that.
Well, my father started it in 1933 with my mother. Now, I was 5 years of age then. And on Sunday morning, we'd go to church. After church, I'd go back and help Dad clean up. My first job in there was cleaning the spittoons in there. So if anybody doesn't know, if they're chewing snuff or tobacco, they spit in them. So I started at the bottom. Yeah. But it was very good growing up. My mother used to make these little pork pies. In French, they call them touque. She used to sell them for 25 cents a piece in place. So I kind of grew up with it. And it was tough. It was a lot of work for my parents. And in between time, when I was on the fire department, I would help them when I was off. And I learned the business. I learned how to cook from my mother, how to roast the roast beef and the corned beef and make the sloppy joe and all that and make the sausage patties by making balls of sausage meat and compressing with two number five cans between two slices of wax paper. So that was, you never, even when you leave the business, you still got work to do. That's all.
And you did this with your wife, Betty, I understand,
yes.
Yeah?
Yes, I did.
You obviously, you did this for many years before the business closed, but we'll get to that. Is there any particular things that you remember over those years? And I'm sure there are many, because I understand you served, you know, everybody from all walks of life, from lawyers to street cleaners.
Yes. Well, we used to get the teachers at 1 o'clock, a little after one, from NFA. And the schools used to be out by then, earlier. And they'd come in and they would kind of loosen up. They would have a few sandwiches and a few cold ones, we'll put that way. And it was on Friday is when they would come in. And I met a lot of nice people. I never know who was coming in. And matter of fact, I even had three nuns in there one day, and the priest. Yeah, I had priests in there, and they used to send sandwiches to the bishop up there from my place. Yeah, and what was the other thing? Then, I'll go into it later. Then, this was back in the 60s or 70s. A group of, I'll say, artists came in. Tom, we'd like to start a movie in here. Would it be okay? And so forth. Yeah, fine. So they came in, and I forgot how long they were there. I mean, they were there for weeks making this movie. As a matter of fact, about 2 months ago, they got it out of the archives down at the college down there. And they had it on the computer. And it showed, I guess it was on for a month or two. It was very interesting to see the older customers, and God gave you a good feeling that you did something good for the community, and it felt good.
Now, you did that job with your wife for many years. Finally, the tavern closed down. Then there was a situation with Yantic Fire Department. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. I was out doing my car in my driveway, and up comes Rick O'Connell. I guess he was the chief or something. And he said, Tom, ever think about putting a bids reunion up there in Yantic? No. Well, would you do it? Yeah, I'll do it, and so forth. But I looked at her first. She's the boss.
We're talking about Betty here.
Yes.
Yep.
And we started it, and it really took off. It's so good that people are talking to each other. And we didn't have it this year because of the COVID, because it's so close. The lines are too long, and they're too close to each other. So they decided to postpone it. And it's great. We have music. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, okay, come on up. You and Betty are going to dance. So we had a dance every year. then I would say a few words to thank them for coming. And it's just a great time. And people are smiling. They're talking to each other. It's a happy occasion.
You're sort of underselling it a bit, because I understand that because of the BIDS reunion, you managed to basically raise thousands upon thousands of dollars to help local people. That's a big deal.
Yes, but I see none of the money. It all goes to benefit. I just enjoy the day it happens, because people are coming up, "Hi, Tom, this and that," and my wife too. Oh, God. And it's a real great happening. I kind of miss it this year, but I understand this is what happens, because nothing's working. And it's great to get the people together to talk to each other. And, you know, they put their phones away and they're talking. Now, this is very unusual. But I saw that, and I'm so happy.
You told me at the very beginning, before we started recording this interview, that this year, 2020, you turned 92 years old.
Yes.
What do you put down to your long and happy life?
Luck in the God.
Because you have had an exceptional life. You've had a life that many people will never have. They will never experience the things that you have experienced.
No.
You also have a great sense of humor as well throughout this interview and before we started.
Sure.
Have you always had that sense of humor?
Yes. I don't know. I like to see people smile. Like I got one the other day about these two old gentlemen. They're sitting on a park bench. They're in their late 80s. And one said to the other, "You know what? I got aches and pains all over and so forth. How about you?" "Well," he said, "I feel like a newborn baby. I'm bald. I don't have teeth. And I think I wet my pants."
Tom, we can't let you go without you telling us, because you teased us at the beginning of the interview about this story about the Russian MiG. Are you going to tell us that story?
Yeah, I'd like to. We put it on one year for Mrs. Slater next door. Their husband is the cancer doctor at the Backus Hospital. And she came up to myself, and we got together with Rick O'Connell. "Would you share the money with the Cancer Society and Yandic?" And I said, "Yes." So anyway, somehow we did it, and this guy got a hold of the story about what we did, and it was some kind of a fundraiser that dealt with cancer people. And Jeremy Bloom's Make-A-Wish Senior Veteran, that was the name of it. And I told him what I wanted for my, my work that I did. "I want to fly in a Russian MiG jet." So lo and behold, they interviewed me, came up, and my wife, my daughter, and Mrs. Slater, we went to Newburgh, New York. I had to take a physical first, and then I went up there, put my jumpsuit on, and had probably, it must have been 3/4 of an hour, an interview from the pilot who owned the Russian MiG jet. So anyway, "Are you ready?" So we're in the cockpit. He tells me that in case anything happens to me, you can release the canopy mechanically, but you got to jump out. And he said, "The only thing is the tail is so big, the tail's going to get you." Oh, I said, "Thank you." "But if something had the aircraft, this is how you eject yourself." But he said, "It's likely we'll be all right," and so forth. So anyway, we took off. You got to do 150 to take off. And we're flying around. He said, watch for the aircraft, the pilot. So, why, what are you going to do? All of a sudden, he did a complete left turn upside down. And then he said, you ready for the other one? We did it the opposite way. How you feeling? Well, I'm fine so far. And then all of a sudden, get ready. We dove down. We did a complete turn around. 6 G's and 2 negative G's. And I was a little dizzy. I'll say a lot dizzy. So anyway, after a few minutes, he said, now I want you to fly the aircraft. So I flew it left. I didn't do anything more. Then I got in the middle and flew it to the right. Then went up a little bit and down. I said, sir, you want me to land this? No. So he took over and landed it. It was about a 30-minute ride in that jet. It was fantastic. It's something I never forgot.
And how old were you when you did that?
I had to be at least 70.
You in your 70s?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about just some of your many, many memories.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service that you've given to your country.
Thank you.
And if you or someone you know has a great story to tell, then get in touch with us by visiting the Connecticut East website and use the contact form to send us their details.
Green Valley Tree LLC is proud to sponsor Connecticut East This Week. Contact Green Valley Tree LLC for all your tree removal and plant health care needs and more. Find us at greenvalleytreeworks.com or call 860-234-4041.
Time now for a look at some of the other stories making the headlines in the region recently. In the Connecticut Examiner this week, the online newspaper has analyzed data from the State Department of Education that found that students in Connecticut are nearly as likely to report testing positive for COVID-19 if they study remotely, in person, or in a hybrid model. According to epidemiologists and experts in the state, that data tracks with the lessons they've learned over the fall semester, as students have returned to the classroom in some regions and stayed home in others. In the day this week, after President Donald Trump signed a $900 billion spending bill with COVID-19 relief measures, Governor Lamont provided preliminary numbers detailing how Connecticut will receive more than $4 billion in direct relief, with much more to come in additional relief. In the Norwich Bulletin this week, with the nation seeing a declining number of underage smokers and tobacco users, the Norwich Police Department has teamed up with the Norwich Prevention Council to keep their community on the right path. Over the next several months, they plan to conduct compliance checks at licensed establishments within Norwich to make sure retailers aren't selling to underage students. In the Chronicle this week, as the Willimantic Public Library remains closed because of the coronavirus pandemic, the library's support group has shifted its book sales into an online bookstore. The Friends of the Willimantic Public Library announced recently the opening of its new online bookstore to raise money for the city library. The bookstore has its own website where customers can purchase books at friendswillimanticlibrarybookstore.com. And in next week's Connecticut East this week, we talk with Jennifer Sullivan, a community and caregiver liaison at Learn in New London, which is a regional educational service centre for all learners in the community. Plus, she's also an author and has published her first book, Sharing the Transition to College, Words of Advice for Diverse Learners and Their Families, helping students with learning difficulties navigate the transition from high school to college. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, where you can also listen to the show again on demand. And please like, follow and share on your social media platforms too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.